With over four decades of experience, Sitel is considered an industry leader in quantitative methods, biometric solutions, and best practices in adaptive clinical trial design. Sitel's latest innovation, the East Horizon platform, is a fully cloud-native software solution, consolidating Sitel's various statistical products in a single comprehensive workbench. With integrated open source capabilities, advanced cloud computing resources, and cutting-edge AI tools, the East Horizon platform is a modern solution for evolving industry demands. Big thank you to our sponsor, Sitel, for supporting Practical Significance.
Hello, and welcome to Practical Significance, a podcast to inspire listeners with compelling stories from statistics and data science and to propel data-driven careers forward. Here are your hosts, the ASA's Associate Executive Director, Donna Lalonde, and Executive Director, Ron Wasserstein.
Well, welcome everyone. We are really delighted to be joining you again for the July episode of Practical Significance. And we have three wonderful friends with us. And so this is going to be a great opportunity for Ron and I to have a conversation with Lance, Kathy, and Brittany. And we are going to start, as we always do, by asking our guests to tell us a bit about their day job, and then we'll get into the topic at hand. So, Lance, I'll start with you. What's your day job?
I'm Lance Waller. I'm a professor in the Department of Biostatistics and Bioinformatics in the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University.
Thanks. And Kathy, you're a familiar guest, but we'll have you tell us about your day job anyway.
My day job just bleeds into my night job, into my 24/7 job, it seems like. I am the Noah G. Harding Professor of Statistics at Rice University, where I've spent my entire career. And the unique thing about our department is we sit in a school of engineering. And so it's been really fascinating being a statistician in a school of engineering throughout my career. And I was the 2022 president of ASA, so championing ASA in our community.
Thanks very much. And we're joined by Brittany, our colleague from the National Academies. And the reason that we are together is that Lance and Kathy are co-chairing a study from the National Academies, Frontiers of Statistics in Science and Engineering, 2035 and Beyond. So, Brittany, we know that you are supporting this effort. So, we'd like to hear a little bit about your day job, and including your work with the Committee on Applied and Theoretical Statistics, or lovingly known as CATS. But then, if you'll also tell us a little bit about why the National Academies convened this study that we'll dig into a bit more. So, Brittany, over to you.
So I'll start by giving a bit of context about the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine and what we do. We were founded in 1863 during the Civil War as a non-governmental, nonpartisan entity to advise the government on questions of scientific, engineering, and medical matters of national inquiry. So we're broadly known for our honorific societies, but we also have this really robust research arm called the National Research Council. And that's where I work under the NRC on the Board of Mathematical Sciences and Analytics. In this capacity, I direct CATS, where we translate state-of-the-art statistics and analytics research to policy questions across a variety of domains. One thing the Research Council is really known for are their consensus studies. So these tend to be reports that respond to a statement of task or a charge and provide key messaging and potentially even recommendations to sponsors and federal agents. So this project that we're working on right now, the Frontiers of Statistics, is a consensus study. Our hope for the Frontiers of Statistics study is that it is a landmark assessment of the field. Other disciplines take advantage of these sorts of opportunities to routinely assess their domains. We see this a lot at the National Academies within astronomy and within physics, and we're very excited to do something similar for the field of statistics. So we broached the idea of doing a forward-looking assessment of the statistical sciences with our federal contacts, and they seem to have a real appetite for a study of this magnitude and this scope. So we are very fortunate to be sponsored by a diverse array of offices across NSA, NIH, and NSF. And at NSF in particular, we're funded by six different directorates, including mathematical and physical sciences, computer and information science and engineering, biological sciences, engineering, geosciences, and STEM education. So this is very much a cross-disciplinary effort, looking at the field of statistics and its broad impact.
Thanks, Brittany, and really appreciate that. I have a question now for Lance and Kathy, who already have really full professional lives and also knew when asked to take on leadership of an academy study that it's a major commitment. So my question is, what were you thinking? No, my actual question was, why were you willing to take this on? Why is this so important that you're willing to set aside other things like, say, sleep in order to lead this project?
I mean, I know both Cappy and I are big advocates for the field of statistics in all its many forms and all the ways it interacts. I think Brittany's list of sponsors is a really impressive list of groups that identify that statistics is important to them. Both Cappy and I have been members of the CATS committee before, and I'm fortunate to serve as its co-chair right now with Liz Stewart at Johns Hopkins. And CATS is one of two statistics committees in the National Academies. The other is CNSTAT, the Center for National Statistics, which focuses on the federal statistical infrastructure and data infrastructure, like the Census Bureau of Labor Statistics. And CATS, in some ways, can be classified as the rest. It's usually not part of ongoing things, but there's a lot of data collected for a lot of reasons, whether that's meteorologic data or fisheries data, a lot of interesting components. And these are challenging questions that are really fun to think about. So I've enjoyed my time as a member of CATS and then in the leadership of CATS, having federal groups reach out to us with questions about data, and then having a collection of 12, 15 people sit around and think and make recommendations on what they should try next. So when this opportunity came up in talking to David Manderscheid at NSF and the director of math sciences, we were really excited about trying to identify individuals with a broad range of experience and interests in different aspects in statistics. And it just seemed like it would be a lot of fun. And then second, the academy staff, like Brittany, are fantastic at organizing, keeping us on task, reminding us of the goals and the difference between a finding and a recommendation. And it's a lot of work, that's for sure, but it's a delight to get to know people in this kind of environment where you get to sit and think around what directions is our field moving and where is it going. And I'm sure Kathy can add to that.
So Lance and Brittany's role, they actually brought the study to fruition and then invited me to join. And so it was a wonderful opportunity. And so why do this? It's clear that our day-to-day lives are changing very rapidly at the moment, but center to all of that is the strength of our discipline and what we bring to the world every day. And so this gives us an opportunity to really focus that conversation around science and technology and where it's going, the frontiers, you know, what's happening, what's new on the horizon. So it's how much fun to think about things like that with such an amazing group of people. And so that is the why. It is a lot of work, there is no doubt. And we still have a lot ahead of us. And so I think we're maybe halfway through this process. And so lots of time for additional input from our community.
One challenge with this is our community, our field is really dynamic. There's always discussions on what's next. And so there have been a lot of similar reports, different aspects, the 2019 Statistics at a Crossroad, other training workshops and roundtables. And trying to pool that is really challenging. We did some background reading on things, you know, as recently as a year or two ago on what the frontiers were. And it's hard to do a frontiers report and not have it sound dated very quickly. So one of our goals is to try to look ahead in this 10-year period, and we hope our community feels like we're both recognizing the other groups that have been thinking about this and writing about it, but also representing those who will be thinking about it next year.
It is interesting how our profession is really always forward-looking. We are a very forward-looking society and group of scientists, and I think that's why we evolve as society's needs for us evolve.
Thanks, Lance and Kathy, and we'll be sure to highlight all of the places in which our listeners can provide input. We know that there's some information collection on the National Academy site, and we'll point folks to that. But Brittany, I'm hoping that you'll give us a little bit of a behind-the-scenes look at the frontiers of statistics in science and engineering 2035 and beyond. And tell us a little bit about how you have been gathering input to date and what's on the horizon for you.
Thank you, Donna. So the first step of any activity at the National Academies is to assemble a committee. And it is the biggest privilege. And my favorite part of the job is working with people like Kathy and Lance and assembling these diverse committees of leaders in the field. And so for this committee, that includes Rena Barber from the University of Chicago, Amy Braverman from NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab, Lauren Crawford from Microsoft Research, David Dunson from Duke, Omar Gatas from UT Austin, Franca Kreuter from the University of Maryland College Park, as well as the University of Mannheim, Jihong Lin from Harvard, Brian Rich from NC State, Steve Sain of Jupiter Intelligence, Ardi Singh from Carnegie Mellon, Daniela Whitten from the University of Washington, and Tian Zhang from Columbia. Once we have our committee assembled, we begin with a very aggressive information gathering campaign to understand the scope and breadth of our field. So in this case, we've hosted a number of panels. And by the way, these are all open to the public. Anyone is welcome to join and listen in. Some of the panels we've hosted for this study include panels on causal inference, on trends in statistical journals, privacy, precision agriculture. So we're looking at statistics at all the frontiers. And then as we write the report, there tends to be a second wave of information gathering where we realize, oh, there may be a gap here where we could explore a little further, or I have a question I need answered. And so these tend to be less panel focused and more, this person might know more about this and could help guide us. And those too are open to the public. And then this is something we're doing uniquely for this study. We want to hear about anyone in the audience right now, whether you're a student or a dean or a professor or a practitioner, however you're intersecting with the field of statistics, we want to hear what you are working on and how you are pushing the frontiers. So that is on our website. It's an open call for perspectives because what we want to do is really represent what's happening in the field. This is not about my thoughts or Kathy's thoughts or Lance's thoughts. It's really looking at what is happening and capturing the trends for the field and where it's headed. So that's what our information gathering looks like.
Thanks, Brittany. It's both really important too, and really hard to think about 2035 right now, isn't it? One of the things I think about in regards to 2035 is that how much I'd like to be in it. So we'll see how that goes. But if you're fast forwarding, Lance and Kathy, maybe we'll start with you. If you're fast forwarding to 2035 and there's one like statistical development or application that you hope will have been realized then, what would that be and why?
So, Ron, I think I'm going to answer that a little bit more broadly rather than focusing on just one aspect, but maybe focusing a little bit on our profession and how we evolve continuously. And maybe this is a good time to remind the audience of ASA's vision. So, what is our vision? A world that relies on data and statistical thinking to drive discovery and inform decisions. In other words, statistics drives evidence-based decision making. So, we each live this vision on a daily basis, bringing our talents and our training in support of wisdom. So, I think that that thought will still carry forward in 2035. And as I look back, think about, since entering this remarkable field, this really is at the intersection of science, engineering, and data. I've just personally witnessed so many advances over the last 35 or even just 15 years. So, if we think of, like DNA sequencing has revolutionized genomics, enabling personalized medicine and transforming how we diagnose and treat disease, breakthroughs in neuroscience underway right now are reshaping our understanding of the brain and cognition. We're also confronting the realities of weather and resilience, prompting this urgent work to understand our role in environmental shifts and design strategies for sustainable development or adaptation. But at the same time, the rise of smart connected cities reflects a growing commitment to technologies that improve the human condition and foster more equitable and empowered communities. So, looking ahead, what do I hope to see? I guess I really just hope to see a future where statistics and statisticians remain at the forefront of all of these amazing transformations, advancing a continually evolving discipline that is essential, again, going back to this discovery, decision making, and design. So we must continually engage collaboratively, helping science, technology, and society understand the world more deeply and navigate it more wisely. So that is my answer for 2035. So you notice I didn't put a bullet on any one single thing, but just really trying to reflect our profession more broadly.
So, Lance, what do you have to say about this?
Kathy did a great job. I mean, if I summarize what interests me most about the field of statistics is that we combine and evaluate the best data available to get the best answers to the questions at hand. Some of those questions are motivated by new ways to measure things. So I think we have to keep up with the technology and hopefully influence the technology there. But some of these are questions that are different than we're used to seeing. I think that's been a lot of our experience with AI. There's a lot of movement. One thing I like about our field is we try to get the best answers we can, but we also have a healthy respect for uncertainty. We have, I would hope, some professional humility that we can make mistakes. We just want to minimize the type of mistakes we make and quantify that, understand it, try to do better than we did before. There's a lot of room for optimization, and I was trained in optimization myself, but if we wait for the best answer, sometimes we short circuit getting a good answer for a good outcome. So that's a lot lumped into a hand waving and a pile of words. But I do think our field brings some reality to how do you implement data-based, evidence-based decisions.
So, thanks for those perspectives. Now, I want to talk with you about artificial intelligence. I'm not going to ask you what it will look like in 10 years, because if we put 10,000 experts together and asked them what it would look like in 10 years, I bet that in 10 years, when we looked, every single one of those answers would be incorrect to a small or large degree. But instead, I'd like to look at like now and ask you, and let's start with you this time, Lance, ask you what your perspective is on the opportunities and challenges for statistics, with regards to AI.
This is an ongoing discussion in our field, and all of us are involved in these discussions. There's a lot of excellent working groups and conversations in our community. So our committee knows that we can't pull all of that together, but we want to get the general sense. And as you said, it's an area that's moving very, very fast. It's driven by some statistical ideas, also computing ideas. We're trying to capture some of the visionary thinking. It's not the only frontier to consider, but it's certainly changing the way we work. I have a metaphor not everyone likes, but I'll share. If you think about the family tree of statistical developments, it's got its roots in probability and probabilities of making mistakes. And we grew that tree to our branches through a bunch of assumptions. One of the assumptions being collect the best data you can, and that data was expensive, so you want to get the most out of the least amount of data you can. And we have a beautiful set of branches on how to do that. Design of experiments. These are all really important issues. They're fundamental to our field, but some of those assumptions are a little different now. So you can pull data together from different sources. It may not be exactly what you want, but there's a lot of it. And having a lot of it's not always better, but it might be better than ignoring it. So trying to regrow this tree with different assumptions may well end up with some different branches in addition to the branches we already have. So I think we need to think about that. The roots are strong, and understanding uncertainty and variations of uncertainty is important. I think there'll be new versions of that, and I think it'll drive where we go. So I think it's in collaboration. I don't think it'll only be in the statistics field. And I think that there's a lot of AI developments that grew out of statistics, important components. I think Kathy's got some comments on that.
Sure. So let me jump in. Part of our information gathering, we held a panel of leading statisticians from industry. So that was one of our efforts. And it was amazing. But Also, the message was clear that not only are we as research statisticians innovating and helping create this new AI world, we also need to become expert users of this world, integrating these tools in our day-to-day workflow. And from this leading group of industry statisticians, there was no middle ground. And so that was very clear. And so then I take that to my day-to-day work. I still try to be an active researcher and asking both practical and visionary questions. And I am actually super excited every day that I get to work on this type of research because of the AI tools. So, I can code more quickly. I can answer my questions more quickly. And so then my questions become richer and better. And I actually find it an absolutely fascinating time to be a statistician, wishing I was 20 again, but I'm not. So maybe all those 20-year-olds that are going to embrace our discipline, they'll be able to ask new questions or even ask the same questions, but ask them in new ways. Let me just get a very specific plug to a recent AAAS webinar, Chris Weichel, that was held maybe a month or so ago. And Chris is one of the leading thought leaders in our field. And he was tackling the problem of understanding fire and the front edge of fire, forecasting the front edge of fire. And he was able to embed his hierarchical model within a machine learning framework that allowed him to do the computing faster and to really nail the answer to the critical question of how to forecast the front edge of a fire in real time. And so it's that type of excitement that we're able to answer bigger questions or the same questions better. So, not only are we advancing artificial intelligence as a community with our research, but just the use of it allows us to do more and do it better in some ways.
Well, Kathy, I'm right there with you, wishing that I was 20 again, sort of. There's some caveats there. But so I can't make us 20 again, but I can ask each of you to give some advice to those folks who are 20 or for those folks who are students or early career researchers now. And they want to position themselves to be at the frontier. What advice would you give to them to help make their future as productive as it can be? Kathy, I'll start with you.
So let me go back to our information gathering exercise for this report. And we also held a panel of leading journal editors in our field. And so, again, this is the fascinating part of doing this. We're getting to hear from so many great people about the field of statistics. But what we heard from these editors was the value of the type of research that statisticians do, the rigor and reproducibility, the importance of that, and the importance of our journal process. And everyone was forward-looking. Everyone was thinking about new ideas in our field. In fact, Lauren Crawford, one of our committee members, he's a part of the JASA reproducibility editorial team. And so I want to tell the young people that that type of work is critically important for our field. But the strength of our science was also clear, so they should just simply embrace our science. We also heard from these editors the strong interest in interdisciplinary work and how excited they are to advance new things in that direction and some new journals that are coming on. So, like the ASA Discoveries as a new journal, and ASA taking on the data science and science and starting the statistics and data science and imaging. There's other things going on in other professional societies along these lines that really bring more opportunities and more outlets for that strong interdisciplinary science, where statisticians are either in a leadership role or a strong partnership role for advancing that science. This is a long answer to the question, but the reason that I say this is because as you're a young person, you can embrace this rigor and reproducibility of our field. You can embrace the methodological advances. You can embrace the interdisciplinary science, whatever aspect of our very broad discipline that you value and you are interested in, go for it. And, we're problem solvers. Our profession equips you to come forward with reliable solutions, and you'll always be a valued asset to any team. So lean into that. Remain curious, inquisitive, and continuously learning. embrace all these new technologies, try to do it in a way that doesn't drive you crazy, but then also ultimately identify your unique contributions that you bring forward every day and be exceptional at the direction you choose, but sufficiently flexible to entertain new ideas. Be kind to each other and most of all, have fun.
I think I can speak with some experience because I've been 20 a couple of times. Kathy was saying this too. The young people in our field, they're the ones that define the frontiers. They are going to be doing the new things. So, your career, you're constantly going to be learning things. There's things you will take with you as sort of classic core ideas, but you'll be presented with opportunities and tools and technology that none of your advisors or teachers were. And that creativity, being open. On the door to my office, I have a sign that says, try often, fail sometimes, and learn always. So don't be afraid to try new things. I got advice. I asked David Brillinger how he got to work on cool projects like an elephant seal diving data set. And he said, I stopped to listen to what question they wanted to answer. And so instead of shoehorning a study into something you already know how to do, listen to the people you're working with. Find out what questions are motivating them, what data they have, and then try to see what questions you can answer with the data available, the methods you're familiar with, the good practices you're aware of, and then compare the answers you do get to the answers that motivated it and try to get those closer together. What additional data would help? What adjustment to the method would help? What additional computing would help? I don't think any single project starts and finishes completely. It's always, did you learn more going through this exercise than you knew at the beginning? And you'll learn more the next time around. As Kathy was talking, I was also reminded as during my time as department chair, I went to the joint statistical meeting. We had a chairs meeting and we were being presented by these young new assistant professors doing data science stuff. And one of the chairs said, how are you going to get promoted doing that stuff? And I interrupted and said, it's our job to get them promoted. They're the ones doing new things. So as a result, I write a lot of promotion letters. So new things are going to happen. And I think for those of you who are entering the field, you're going to change the field. It's going to change with you. For those of us in the field who are in leadership positions, we need to recognize that a lot of the change is coming after us and try to celebrate that. I think the dynamic nature of our field is really one of the exceptional components of statistics or a career in statistics. So you want to do work that you're proud of, but you also want to keep some humility in place that you didn't do everything on this and it's moving forward and someone after you, maybe you next year will do a better job. That's what keeps a field fresh. That's what defines frontiers. And that's what I think we're most excited about when we go to hear presentations on someone working in a new area. They usually didn't just start yesterday. They were just curious about it and started learning more about it. And before you know it, they're defining the frontier. So I'd encourage, all your listeners to see where they can take the next things.
Brittany, we'll turn it over to you. I suspect there are folks in the audience that would actually like to hear, how could I get a job like Brittany's? That sounds pretty cool. So, feel free
Yeah, Lance and Kathy
to,
would like to know that too. So.
yeah, Lance and Kathy, we all. So feel free to talk broadly, but maybe a little bit specifically as well.
I'll start by saying, for the sort of work we do on every single project I've been a part of at this point, which is a lot at this point, every single project, I hear that we need an increasingly interdisciplinary workforce. And not in the way that this is a nice to have, but in a way we are really concerned about the workforce and where it's headed. And we want to make sure that it is interdisciplinary. And our CATS oversaw a study on digital twins that was published in 2024. And that was one of the prominent themes in that report, is the need for an increasingly interdisciplinary workforce. That's something we heard on this study in an information gathering session where we heard from people from national labs. They said we need people who understand the statistics and the computational constraints we're up against. So, whatever you do, be willing to learn from other fields, be willing to embed yourself in other fields. And I think I'm repeating what Lance was saying, be listening to what their needs are. Every field, every domain has data questions. They have questions that can be answered well by statistical methodologies. So that's my first recommendation, is make yourself interdisciplinary, and echoing Kathy, be kind. I think that's the number one way to do that, is be kind when you're working with people from other domains. As far as my job, it is so much fun to be at the intersection of all these conversations. I think, remember that there is a forest. It's not just trees. That's a big part of the job, is there is a national discourse around these sorts of questions. And so I think being able to abstract a level higher than just, this paper or this one thread you're pulling, look at the overall tapestry. I think that's too many metaphors in one answer. So I'll stop here.
That's great. Thank you all. Before we proceed, Lance, can we go back to that sign in your office again? It said,
Sounds like a haiku, but one day I just thought of this. It was like a year ago. Try often, fail sometimes, learn always. I feel like a lot of people in our field were good at school. We weren't used to trying things we could not succeed in. But sometimes you have to try something and have it not go well and learn something from that. So I think it came during a day where what I was trying often, it was not working. And I thought, well, at least I know what doesn't work now. I look at it often just to remind myself that it's okay to try something you don't know is guaranteed to succeed.
Well, thanks. I feel like that's sort of the now you tell me thing, because I realized that I had those verbs and adverbs not properly aligned, but now I know how they're supposed to go together. So, okay, let's get back to the study. And I want to ask each of you how you hope the study will influence research directions and funding priorities in statistics. Of course, I'm being optimistic when I use the word funding in there, but what impact do you hope the study will have? And Brittany, I'd like to start with you from your perspective in the academies, and then Kathy and Lance in that order. Thank you.
In my role, it is my hope that this study demonstrates the significance of statistics to science and engineering, which is the title of the study. But statistics plays such a crucial role in enabling technology and in collaborations with other domains, and it serves a role for American competitiveness. And I hope this study continues to demonstrate the brilliant work that statisticians are doing and how vital that work is to our success.
So, Kathy, what do you think?
I think I put a ditto on Brittany. So, absolutely, our profession is at the forefront of science and technology advances, and this report should provide that insight and lay a foundation for funding for the profession and why investment in statistics is so critical at this juncture. And I believe we're going to do that. And I'm optimistic. I know that these are very dynamic times for the whole science enterprise. But I do feel like our discipline and the thoughts that we're bringing forward in this report will really help advance society through the contributions that our discipline brings. And so we're trying to lay out a funding foundation for the next few years for sure.
Thanks, Kathy and Lance.
We have a resilient discipline that rises to challenges. I think when we started this study, we were thinking this was how far can we push things that are already on the edge. And I think one of the things we're finding is some of our frontiers might be filling in gaps, data we always assumed would be available or get bigger and bigger with more things added to it. Maybe it won't grow so fast. Can we use what we have in better ways? I think there's some real challenges there, and I don't want to see frontiers only being considered to be pushing the existing things out there, but to try to make all of the work better. So I think a lot of us in our field get, I know I get frustrated when someone thinks they took one statistics class and they have the complete toolbox and nothing's been added to it. I think it's a set of tools that you're constantly building new versions of. And we want those frontiers to answer long-lasting questions better, answer new questions we'd never thought of before. I think that's the exciting thing, is that you can build this toolbox and you can define how do we use new types of data? How do we answer new questions? How do we combine things? These are old questions, but I think they kind of consistently define what's next for us. So, defining frontiers is always hard. It's really tempting to say, what have we been doing the last 5 years? That's really great. Or what's going on this week? But we don't know what our job's going to be like a year from now. But we have tools to make our job exciting and do new things. And I think we can rise to these challenges and further expand our field.
That's very much appreciated. We at ASA are so grateful that you all have undertaken this task, and you can be sure that we are eager for this report and we'll actively promote it when it arrives on our doorstep. So we look forward to that.
This has been just such a wonderful conversation. I'm kind of sorry that we're at the end, but we are. And we have some traditional endings for practical significance. And that is, we love to hear what, in your spare time, what you are reading, listening to, watching, help add to my TBR. And so, Lance, I'll start with you. Anything that's particularly exciting in reading, watching, or listening, or all of the above?
I'm really enjoying the Thursday Murder Club series of books. And then I just read a paper yesterday that had individual flight paths of individual mosquitoes. So maybe that's again, wow, that's amazing data. What kind of questions can you ask with that? Is that going to keep me from getting dengue? I don't know, but I'll know how they were flying. So that's maybe an odd combination, but that's what's on my reading list.
That's a great combination. Brittany, what about you?
I love this question. My two favorite things on this earth are working with statisticians and talking about books. So I lead a book club called the Big Books Book Club in my spare time, where we read books that are over 500 pages, but we only read like 4 books a year, just to set expectations. We're currently reading The Priory of the Orange Tree, which is our first fantasy book by Samantha Shannon. So it's very exciting and very different from our past books.
And is this an in-person or virtual book club, Brittany?
Virtual. We started during COVID, and as we've moved away to different places, we've kept going. And so we've churned through all the classics. We've done Anna Karenina and things like that. So now we're branching out a bit more.
Yeah, because I can already feel listeners reaching out and wanting to know, can they join, right? So
we are always happy to welcome more members.
Wonderful. That's great. And Kathy?
So I really am totally embedding myself in learning every AI tool that I can. And so it's almost becoming a journey on its own. And so I just find it very fascinating. So I am spending a lot of time that direction. Maybe I'll do that while I'm anxiously waiting for the next season of Lincoln Lawyer. As Ron knows, I like to binge watch whatever's coming out. And then I started Nate Silver's On the Edge. I have to say that it's a little slow going for me, but I now have learned all the rules of poker and and risking everything. So that's what's current in my space.
That's great. Well, we really appreciate all those recommendations, as we appreciate the time that you took to have a conversation with us today. And we have another tradition, and that is we always end with Ron's top 10. So I will turn it over to my colleague, Ron, for the top 10.
Thanks, Donna. Always eager to help our Practical Significance podcast listeners grow both professionally and personally, we take this opportunity to focus on a much beloved institution, game night. That special time when family and friends gather to eat, drink, play games, and hopefully remain on speaking terms by the end of the evening. To help us avoid certain faux pas that we might be tempted to commit, here are the top 10 ways statisticians ruin game nights. So without further ado, here's a list of the behaviors that will guarantee you are never invited back. Number 10. Insisting on randomizing seating arrangements between games to control for positional advantages. Number 9, delaying the start of a clue game until they have calculated Bayesian priors for each suspect. Number 8, loudly calculating the player's expected value prior to their turn. Number 7, during a game of apples to apples, developing a predictive model for each player's judging tendencies. Number 6, insisting that the game must be played 48 times to achieve statistical significance. Number 5, spending a half hour testing the dice for unbiasedness before starting a game. Number 4, turning Pictionary into a crowdsourced annotation task. Number 3, demanding that the Scrabble tile letter values be reweighted based on modern text analyses. Number 2, lecturing on optimizing expected resource generation rates before beginning a game of Settlers of Catan. And the number one way statisticians ruin game nights? Bragging about the machine learning algorithm they use to improve their social skills. Well, that's it for this episode of Practical Significance. We look forward to continuing the conversation next month.
We are Sitel. We are the world's leading data science CRO. With global experts in trial design, biostatistics, analytical methods, evidence, value, and access, positioned on every continent. Our services and software support your drug development through consultation and customized partnerships, illuminating your therapeutic journey through every phase, for every patient, advancing the future of human health. Sitel. Your success, our methods.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Practical Significance, the podcast of the American Statistical Association. A new episode will be coming your way next month from AmStat News, the ASA's monthly membership magazine.